Good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Thank you all for being here this morning. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the roundtable. I have an announcement about next week's program. There is a change in the schedule. We were originally scheduled to have a program about Vera House, which will be starting its White Ribbon campaign, but we've postponed that. We'll still have the program, but later on during the campaign, because I had been asking the new New York State Attorney General to come visit us, and he will be in town next week. So on March 24th, next week's program will be Eric Schneiderman, who is the new State Attorney General. So think about some questions you would like to ask him. It covers a lot of territory. And keep in mind that the last two state attorney generals turned out to have bigger and better jobs. So you never know. You never know. So that is next week. The following week, on March 31st, we will be talking about Centro. And, of course, during this month, Centro is having some public hearings about issues with their budget, but we'll also be talking about the new transfer hub that is under construction, or at least there's construction on the site. So that's the next 2 weeks. But this morning, we are going to be talking about arts, culture, and entertainment. And I'm going to introduce our keynote speaker is Heidi Holtz, who's director of grant making for the Gifford Foundation. You may also remember Heidi from her days at Syracuse Stage, where she worked in communications and educational outreach. At the foundation, though, she has been instrumental in the design and execution of phase one of the Ideas Collaborative, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Heidi is also a member of the board of the Onondaga Citizens League, on the board of Y Arts, and has been on boards of other arts organizations and community organizations, has taught drama courses, and has directed or performed in radio plays and staged readings, and so you're going to recognize her voice, and she'll be radio listeners. And I think she's going to ask the other two speakers to introduce themselves or say a few words so that their voices will also be recognized. Thank you, Heidi.
Thanks, Sandra. Steve Butler was going to be joining us today as executive director of the CRC, Cultural Resources Council, but he unfortunately became ill and couldn't, so I'm going to pick up some of his stuff. These guys are going to pick up some of his stuff, but I wanted to take this opportunity to introduce you to our two other guests. Many of you may know Steve Kern, who's the executive director of the Everson Museum. He's been here since 2008. Feels a lot longer than that. He came from the Connecticut State Arts Museum. Before that, he was the head of the European Collections at the San Diego Museum of Art. Prior to that, he was with the Sterling and Francine Clark Institute in Williamstown. And started out in Springfield, Massachusetts, at the Art Museum. He believes he's worked at places that were rich and poor, big and small. So he figures he can address a lot of issues here. Natalie Stetson is the Director of Development and Marketing with the Erie Canal Museum. She is going to graduate in May with a Master's in Museum Studies from Syracuse. She graduated from the Honors College of Florida Atlantic University with a major in American Studies and Literature. This is her first time in New York State when she moved here, but her father was a graduate student at Syracuse 30 years ago. So she's here, and she doesn't plan on leaving, she said. So. I wanted to take us a brief moment to talk to you about sort of my part of this was the methodology and the reasons for coming here. This, by the way, is the final result. You'll all be expected to read it and be quizzed on it by the end of the night. It's a very thick booklet. I will not be reading it to you. We'll just hit on the salient points. I think you all know that Onondaga County has an extraordinarily rich arts and cultural scene. That was a given as we began this. It's a number of organizations, and our consultant who's working with us was stunned at the number of organizations that came. But as you also know, there have been struggles, and there have been sort of consistently a shrinking audience, older audiences, younger audiences are not attending. This is nationwide. This is not just Syracuse. And this was all happening before there was an economic downturn. A number of us as the foundations have come together and have done a variety of different things working with the arts. Almost all of us are regular funders of the arts in some degree or another. And we've all tried different endeavors that would help you know, bring together capacity building, to bring together community engagement opportunities. So when it became clear that there kind of was a tipping point about to happen, we felt as funders, the organizations are struggling to stay above water. It's hard for them to collaborate when they're working so hard on these sort of things. We kind of realized after a point that even if every single one of the major funders in town devoted significant portions of their budget to just the arts, we would not be able to still continue to make up that gap that continues to grow between the shrinking audiences and lower memberships and things of that nature. So we began looking into various audience development opportunities. We brought together six local funders. Six local funders came together, I should say. The Allen Foundation, the Central New York Community Foundation, Gifford Foundation, the Dorothy and Marshall M. Reisman Foundation, the John Ben Snow Foundation, and the Trust for Cultural Resources of the County of Onondaga. We came together and said we need to start looking at how we help audience development. And we talked to arts funders as well as arts organizations and councils all around the country. And one name appeared several times, and her name was Sorrel Phillips with an organization called Decision Support Partners in Bozeman, Montana. And Sorrel, I'll go into her study and why she came here, but one of the things I wanted to point out, a couple things I want to point out to sort of define and preface. First is that the Ideas Collaborative is truly a collaborative. There may be six funders who have come together to fund this project, but it would not have happened without the 43 organizations that are a part of it, who have gave of their data, of their capital, if you will, their cultural capital, to help participate. They gave of a lot of time to help make this happen. And they also, another major component of the Ideas Collaborative is the community. Sorrel Phillips believes that any kind of study talking about the audience should be from the bottom up, not the top down. So no one dictates what the study is supposed to look like. It will really emerge in what we've learned, and we are learning some new things. Also, in most communities in which she's worked, and I would say in most of the world, a collaboration of funders would not have come together to run this. They would have been approached perhaps by the local arts council. And the Cultural Resources Council in Syracuse has had some struggles over the past few years. And a year ago, when this conversation first happened, they had just had a new leader. They were just making some turnaround, and they had some administrative challenges that just they were the first and are the first to admit they could not have taken it on. And so we came together as a group of funders, and it has been a unique position to make that happen. What's been sort of gratifying is that how much we've been able to work increasingly as the project has evolved. And Steve's going to talk a little bit more about that in the Arts Council, Cultural Resources Council, and where they're landing and could be landing in the future, is that how much they've increasingly become very strong partners on this project. So we have watched their strength and their capacity grow through this process as well. To the extent that, and I'll just give you a little hint, one of the recommendations is to really restore the CRC to what it should be in a community of this size, but Steve will talk about that more. Sorrel came to our community basically about a year ago at this time and said, I will meet with these organizations, but if they don't want to do this, I'm not doing it. And so it was very important for her to have a conversation about what was involved in her work, and they all came behind it. I should also note that the definition of arts and culture is rather broad for us. We believe it is a full range of things people do to connect with their creativity and traditions. And this can be passive, which is watching or observing, and it can be active, which is actually creating. That means that we have in here performing arts groups, visual arts, heritage sites like museums. We have public radio and television, the zoo, the MOST, and all three colleges, and all the on-center events are all considered part of this endeavor. So it's not just sort of the major four or the smaller traditionally arts groups. Excuse me, let me take a drink. Sorrel Phillips' work involves sort of a different types of components. Her analysis, which is a marketing analysis, is called geodemographic analysis, and it is basically a way of studying where the current audience comes from and what their makeup is and how they like to be marketed to, for example. Do they prefer print media? Do they listen to the radio? Things of that nature. And to do that, she had to sort of start with several steps. The first thing was we determined that the Ideas Collaborative would be made up of organizations that are residing or based in Onondaga County. But obviously we all know that our audience doesn't come from just Onondaga County. So she created a transactional area, which extended out to audiences that come from, say, Cazenovia and Auburn and such as that. So even though I keep referring to Onondaga County, it is broader than that in terms of audience. We brought SORAIL to officially start phase one in May. It officially ended last month. Phase one, we'll talk about phase two, but phase one was cost a total of $80,000 with the six funders coming together making that happen. It had two parts. All the participating organizations were asked to provide their patron data. This is their mailing list, their membership list, their subscribers list, all those things. And if any of you have ever been with an organization or been on a board, I hope you appreciate what an extraordinary gesture that was. She had not one organization balk, and in other communities she have had organizations worry, because that is their treasure, that mailing list. That is their gold. And they knew that it wasn't going to be looked at by anyone other than SORAIL, but it was still a very extraordinary gesture on the part of the organizations to step forward and do that. And that's what really formed the core of what we call the aggregate data about our community. The other major part of it is a community-wide survey, and that took the form of some focus groups and then followed by an actual full survey, not a scientific survey. We didn't do a poll survey, a telephone poll, or anything like that. But I'll talk a little bit about how we feel the survey really does reflect a great deal of what's happening. The other thing the groups did, by the way, is, again, in addition to their data, they came to a series of three sessions over the course of the year working with SORAIL. They hosted these community conversations of small groups of about a total of 150 people in September that came together and told us what they thought should be studied and what they saw as their barriers and what they had big ideas about for doing and changing and marketing the arts. They also, when it came time to distribute the survey, were incredible about sending it out to their mailing list and sending it out. And I'm sure many of you hopefully saw the survey or received it. I received it five times, just on the basis of me being it, which was very gratifying. Just a quick story about the survey. We have an email that's for the Ideas Collaborative through Gmail address, and I got, clearly someone had sent out accidentally a corrupted link to the online survey. And we had on the email, contact ideascollaborative@gmail.com if you have a question. And I started to get this flurry of people, and it was over a weekend, complaining to me that the link was broken, and please fix it. And how many times do you have people complaining to you that they can't complete a survey? They're begging me for this survey to get fixed, and I'm frantically trying to figure out what happened. So that was sort of a little sign to us about the excitement around this. So overall, what SORAIL Phillips and her company does is they analyze the existing audience characteristics, and then they compare them to the population at large through this national census data and marketing data. Through doing that, she's able to identify the consumer demand and in these markets. She then collected this community input through, as I mentioned, these public meetings and surveys. In these public meetings, various ideas were brought forth, and she tested those solutions. The organizations themselves also participated in helping form the survey questions. For example, SORAIL sent out the survey to the organizations and said, what am I missing? And one of them said, you're missing any question about, are you a grandparent and do you bring kids? So it's very important that every voice is heard at this, because it was a dumb thing to not have put in, but we suddenly realized it. So the survey tested those solutions that were being broached. And then her report recommends what should we do to go forward. So when she combined all the aggregate data of all of the arts organizations, it came up with 77,000 households. It's not 77,000 people, it's 77,000 households. She also appreciates the fact that some people may not be on a mailing list. Maybe you go with a neighbor, and it's your neighbor that is actually the one that holds the subscription. So even 77,000 is possibly a small number. However, it's a pretty gratifyingly large number of the entire community. And she looked at these 77,000 households and figured out how much there is of market penetration and how much there is of overlap between the audiences. And then with these forums, these community conversations, she sent out the survey, and we sent out the survey and had over 3,000 responses. And in any other community she's worked with, it has never reached more than 1,200. So this was an amazing response. The other amazing thing about it, yes, it's not scientific. And I think we all would know that if you're going to bother to fill out a survey, it's because you're probably already inclined to care, right? But what was interesting is that because of that, because you had an audience that cared, to some degree what they say carries a little bit more weight. So maybe even their criticisms carry a weight because they know. They know what's the right, you know, or at least they know what they have experienced. So there is some authority in their voice to come forward. So I want to just touch really quickly on some of the quick findings, and forgive me if I have to keep referring here because this was going to be Steve's part a little bit. So of that 77,000 households, they determined that that reaches one-third of the potential households in Onondaga County, which is a pretty large number. The organizations themselves only have an overlap of 31%. This is smaller, much smaller than the organizations thought themselves. So in other words, you know, 31% are on more than one mailing list. Others are just on one single mailing list. That means there's a great potential for collaboration and growth in the audiences. She discovered that there is an extraordinarily strong market penetration and a very strong interest, and that the organization highly, highly values this, which tells her that if there's not a lot of audiences coming, that the arts need to tell their story better. They need to be getting out there and telling the community a little bit more and bringing people in because people already believe they want it, but there are reasons why they're not coming, and one of them being tell your story better. She also identified three distinct arts markets, and in the flyers you have in front of you or packets you have in front of you, there's a little calendar. The darker areas is the strong market. Those are the market that is actually to some degree oversaturated. It's an existing market you don't want to lose, but there's not a whole lot of more growth potential in that. There's a medium section. This is probably one of the strongest areas, growth potential. This is an audience that wants to come, is interested, but is not always being reached. And then there's a weak market, and weak doesn't mean ignore. Weak just means this is a slightly harder challenge for what their needs might be. The other thing that we heard over and over and over again, because I sat in on all of these community conversations, was that there is there's a lack of compelling, broad-based, accurate, and easily reached information about what goes on in the arts in our community. People tend to know about their organizations, but they may not know about other and everything that's going on. People said, I have family coming in for the weekend, and I don't know where I'm going to find out everything that's going on. So she has recommended that the organizations consider some sort of collective marketing program to do this. Collective packaging, and that's where the CRC comes in, to really get the word out about it, and also look at exploring discount opportunities. The organizations could look to broaden some of their formats and some of their programs a little bit. People said there's too much going on all on one weekend and then nothing going on in another weekend. Everything's on a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. Why can't things be on a Monday and Tuesday night? Why can't things be at 5:30 and not always at 7:30 or 8? So there was really heard a lot of these various options. I'm just hitting the target points here, folks. It's a lot more detailed than that, obviously. Some of the big ideas that the survey sort of voted on, if you will, was creating a really comprehensive marketing branding campaign across all of the arts and culture organizations and heritage, et cetera, to really identify our community. That could include a variety of forms, a very easily searchable website that works in conjunction with the other websites that are existing in our town. Better communication from local universities. A lot of people said, I want to go to these things, but I can't always find the information. I can't find my way around when I get on campus sometimes. So there was some basic information that was helpful. And then, I think not surprisingly, a real plea for some very imaginative ticket packaging, customized ticket packaging, discounts, pay what you can, things of that nature. There are existing audiences, as anyone knows, is your best audience. But a lot of our organizations don't have the capacity to track their audience as well. So one of the things would be to help that happen a little bit more. Help the organizations realize that they have a potential, and the analysis of the overlap will guide towards possibly some collaborations and partnerships that no one might have known existed. She's able to really break it out into, you know, what public, you know, radio stations may work with a particular organization, or does the zoo hit well with this museum? I mean, it's odd, not odd, but unusual pairings that people may not have expected are present. So her major recommendations are this broad-based marketing campaign to really enable the community to come together and find a place. And it's more than just, this is what's going on tonight. It is, where's the parking? How many of you would have thought that the comment on the issue of parking was that there's not enough of it? Okay.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere, but people don't know where it is. So what we heard in the survey was, it's not that there's not enough. I just don't know where it is. So when you go to a site, tell me where the parking is. Tell me where the nearest restaurants are. Tell me things like that. There are issues that emerge out of the survey which really the funders and the organizations can't control. We want a more walkable city. We want better lighting downtown. These are policy issues, and we are beginning to have conversations with the policy people to say, look, this is what we're hearing. This can all help advance things. A major, major part of this is that she did this aggregate data. She also did an analysis of each individual organization's market. And that's a pretty major gift to these organizations. They will work with her and get their market analysis and who they should reach and who they overlap with and how they should market to this audience. There's various other smaller things. We are going to hopefully down the road be able to give some money to help organizations accomplish some of these changes. We're going to have some national workshops with marketing people, say this is how you can use new media, for example. But one of the major changes is that Sorrel feels very strongly that what has been missing in this community in the last couple of years has been a very strong arts council. It's the nexus of an organization. Strong arts communities have strong arts councils. So she is really recommending that a lot of these efforts go to really help continue that turnaround and really help establish the Cultural Resources Council as what it really should be. So I'm going to stop here. I'll just do a little closing thing at the end, but I want to toss this over to these guys because a lot of what I said is mostly bearing on them. So, Steve.
Do you want me to go next?
Yeah.
My comments will be at least two-part. First, to talk about CRC and the big picture of the arts community from my point of view as a newcomer, and then to switch into how this whole study worked for the Everson Museum of Art and how it's going to impact the way you'll be learning more about us, you as individuals and you as a community. I've been working with various institutions in New York State for the last 30 years on exhibitions, research, publication. Institutions from Albany, the Albany Institute, the Memorial Art Gallery, the Albright Knox Museum. And that's one of the reasons that the Everson Museum going back to the early 1980s. One of the reasons I was delighted to come to this part of New York State is because there is this gorgeous necklace of institutions that goes right along the thruway, oddly enough. Great museums that go back a really long time. What made Syracuse even more interesting than the others, aside from the fact there was a job available here, is the fact that this community has so much. And I was struck when I was reading an article in the newspaper on the front page about cuts in education. Some of you may have read my letter to the editor about it, that compared West Jenny to Syosset, New York, Syosset on Long Island outside of New York City, talking about the wonderful enrichment and arts programs in Syosset. And it was all from the point of view of wealthy community versus not wealthy community. But it missed a very important point, which is Syracuse, New York can provide for its school kids programs in opera and art museums, which were two of the things cited that wonderful Syosset has available to them. Well, wonderful West Jenny has the exact same thing, because there are very few other communities, not just in New York State, but I would suggest anywhere, and I think we do know just about anywhere, that has the cultural resources, not just for entertainment, but really to function as core value in a community. And we can provide the exact same thing to our schools, for example, that suburban New York City can. It just has to be used. So anyway, that's one thing that keeps me, it reinforced the decision to come here almost 3 years ago. When I came here, it was recognizing the potential, also recognizing the history of institutions. And one of the comparisons automatically that I made, because I know Rochester quite well, is why is Rochester the go-to place for arts and culture in upstate New York? It's got a great art museum, it's got Eastman House, it's got symphony, it's got performance. How is that different from what we've got here in Syracuse? We've got excellence. They have excellence. They have a strong, empowered arts council that is promoting the entire arts community and is really responsible for that identity in Rochester. Frankly, we are doing just as much, and in fact, during Turner de Cezanne, when the Everson had close contact with media outlets from Albany to Buffalo, the newspapers were saying Syracuse is doing a lot more. And so why is that for me? Just the simple thing, there has been no strong funded arts council for us. And we need that to present a unified voice in arts, culture, history, heritage, entertainment. And so I'm delighted that the study is coming up with the CRC as a place where a lot of the responsibility will fall, because under Steve Butler's leadership, also going back just to 2008, the organization is ready and willing to move forward on behalf of all of us. So I think with an empowered arts council, that will then allow us to focus on our own needs as institutions and participate fully with our peers. Again, Syracuse, the Art Museum goes back to 1897. OHA goes back to what, 1860-something. Civic Morning Musicals have been performing since the 1890s. This is an extraordinary record of accomplishment and achievement and longevity in an institution like in a city this size. And so the Everson, I think, has great foundations to build on. Over the last 20 years, however, as demographics have changed, as technical support has changed, in other words, going from paper to word processing, now to really sophisticated databases, we have found ourselves in a position, as of 2-3 years ago when I first arrived, what is our actual mailing list and how does this work? So this is an example of how the Ideas Collaborative is helping us. When we provided our database, all of our names and our contacts, first of all, it was all confidential, so you are not on everybody's mailing list now. It was easy to share that information. One of the things that happened is the information has been cleaned up. So for those of you who might be getting 3 or 4 things from one institution now, hopefully you'll be receiving 1 per institution, so we're not wasting postage. And I think that's an incredibly important thing for us. The other thing is, you know, how many of you go fishing? Go out in the lake or out in the ocean, you go fishing. And you know, my brother has a fishing boat out on Cape Cod, and we go out, and he hits the sonar button, you know, and it's like, oh, there are a whole bunch of bluefish below us. That's really cool. So we know where to go fishing. With the Ideas Collaborative, the Everson has a better idea of where to go fishing now, because we look at the statistics that come in, and in the wealthiest segment of our society, of our community, that segment that should be supporting the arts more fully, we know that there are 1,906 households, and we have really good representation in that. 660-some of those 1,900 households are part of the Everson. But that leaves 1,300 more that we can try to tell our story to, as Sorrell would say, because if we haven't been telling our story well enough or strong enough, or if we haven't been doing well enough or performing strongly enough, we have to then convince, because support is the only way that we as an institution can keep moving forward. The Everson doesn't sell seats. The Everson is, most of what we do is free. And so we have to rely on income in other ways. And we hear about institutions now where the water is above the nose. Well, the Everson is just below the nose, so there's not a lot of wiggle room for us. But we have to keep on presenting. Now's not the time you cut back. Now's the time you keep moving forward. So the Ideas Collaborative allows us to be more efficient. It shows us where there is overlap, doesn't give your names and addresses, but it gives us a good indication of where we should be going. And for an institution that has based not just the last 3 years, but in fact a lot of activities before that, on the power of co-sponsorship, co-promotion, and collaboration, this study is really going to allow us to move forward in very tangible ways. And again, circling back, most importantly, it allows us to be a part of a larger community image and a community identity that we know will not just serve each of us as institutions, but certainly will connect into that wonderful thing of revenue streams and economic development through tourism. and ultimately helped to put the focus on Syracuse as the go-to place for arts and culture, and convince not just tourists coming in, but our elected officials as well. And so I think now when I look at 77 households out of, what is it, 230,000?
Mm-hmm.
I think our legislators have to wake up to the reality of how we are serving their constituents. And our constituents, their constituents, have to understand that if their legislators aren't supporting what is important in their lives, it's time for a change. So it's on several different levels, advocacy, performance, program designing, that the Ideas Collaborative really rings in the most sincere and true way for us as an institution. So I'm delighted with the results so far.
Thank you.
Pep talk.
Great. Natalie?
Well, kind of bouncing right off what Steve was saying, I think that one of the best things that's come out of the Ideas Collaborative is collaboration. We've talked about this rich, rich cultural atmosphere in Syracuse and how many different organizations we have. But before the collaborative, there wasn't a lot of conversation between them. As a matter of fact, institutions almost see each other as competitors, competing for audiences, whereas that's not really true, as we found. There's not a whole lot of overlap. We're not really competing for audiences, and what we really need to do is work together to get everybody to go to see everybody. And I think that the Ideas Collaborative has been wonderful for that reason, to get us all talking to each other and how we can help each other. Also, for the Erie Canal Museum specifically, it's a museum that's been on Erie Boulevard in a historic building, a building that's been there since 1850, and the museum's been there for almost 50 years. And there's a huge amount of the Syracuse community that's like, oh, I thought that was someplace else. I didn't even know that was up on Erie Boulevard. And with the Ideas Collaborative, it will help us find that new audience, find who to target, and get the community into this museum that it's about the Erie Canal, which is an incredibly important part of the upstate New York community, New York and the country as a whole, really. And so the Ideas Collaborative will really help with that, and it has already. It's been great for the museum. Another thing I want to just touch on slightly is the population in the three colleges and universities in Syracuse and how Ideas, I think, will help with that. Students want to go to cultural events. They want to go out and participate in the communities where they're going to school. But for them, it's hard to learn about these things, to find out what is going on. When your parents come to visit you for the weekend, what are you going to do with them? Take them to your favorite restaurant, maybe, but you could take them to a Syracuse stage show. You could take them to your local museums. But the students don't. They live in these little pockets of university, of school, and having an arts council that helps it make it easier for them to know what's going on will really help. Speaking from experience, someone who's lived in Syracuse for only 2 years now, and little by little, the longer I live here, the more I find out about what's here, what Syracuse can offer me. And I think that the Ideas Collaborative, I know that the Ideas Collaborative will really help institutions reach out to university students more to help broaden that audience, because it's important that students, young people, start to go to these cultural institutions, because got to start them young so they keep going and bring their kids eventually, and the audience just keeps growing. I think that's good.
Yeah, the only other thing I think you and I talked about is the idea of new media to a younger audience.
Right. New media.
How to reach the audience.
Yeah, new media is very important. As a young person, I know that where I get most of my information is, for me, it's through email. For a lot of other young people, it's Facebook and Twitter. And working in new media for organizations, especially organizations that have been around for a very long time, making this transfer to new media to actually update a Facebook page so that a younger audience will see it is important. And that's something that it's kind of difficult for organizations to grasp onto. It's like, I already have enough to do. Do I really need to go onto Facebook and update my status? Well, you do, actually, in order just to keep showing up on someone's news feed, which are all just new vocabulary words that are becoming an increasingly important part of our world.
Can I comment on that, too? New media really is something that's interesting. One reason, if you want to learn more, There's a big article in the New York Times today about new electronic digital new media and art museums. The Everson made that challenging step with electronics, with social media, 3 years ago. And again, looking to Turner de Cézanne as a defining moment for us, social media were a very important means of disseminating information about the exhibition and promoting it. And we had more comments that people had learned about the exhibition from Facebook and Twitter than anything else. Newspapers came in second, so I'm glad newspapers were there. Billboards were third. So new media cannot be underestimated, and frankly, the results that we've had with everything from Foursquare and Twitter and Facebook and Groupon, those may be foreign words to some of us now, but they won't be foreign words for long, to stay connected to digital media, not just as a means of communicating, but also as a means of presenting in the galleries. So there are some museums, Cleveland, for example, that have whole departments devoted just to that. The challenge, I think, is when there's not a department or an individual heads it up, and so everybody is participating. But it shows the way we as institutions here in Syracuse, but also across the country, are redefining and rebranding ourselves. And Natalie, we agree completely that if you're not working on your next generation of consumers, then you're missing the boat 20 years from now. So,
right. One of the interesting things, that touch on that last immediate point, we heard a lot in the community conversations from people who said, you know, I was taken to the arts as a kid, and I'm worried that the current kids aren't being taken. And so that's one of the things that the survey addresses, and ideas that Sorrell's putting forth of, you know, do some creative marketing for families. Really target grandparents bringing their grandkids. And so you're targeting almost the traditional audience as well as that new audience simultaneously. The other thing we're doing is the some of the smaller, budget-wise, smaller activities for the recommendations for the future, which are small in money but actually huge in impact, is to bring in some national marketing experts in new media. Also, we are hoping to be able to send several representative organizations from Syracuse to the National Arts Marketing Conference in Louisville, Kentucky, in the fall. They will then be expected to come back and have a workshop with everyone else. And that goes to that issue of sharing that Natalie mentioned. The six funders have come together, and we have accepted the recommendations. And we are in the process of pulling together the funding to help make it happen. We have tasked the CRC to take a leadership role in coordinating this marketing campaign and pulling people together. The funders, you know, we've always been in a reactive mood in the past, reactive mode in the past, I should say. People come to us, we have a project, let's fund it. And what I think is interesting about ideas is that I believe it's the first time that this diverse a number of foundations have come together around one targeted strategic initiative. And we've come together on other things in different pockets, but this is a pretty unique process. And one of the reasons is because we all have the ability to somewhat have a bird's eye view. I've worked in the arts for 25 years, and I know you're kind of so busy flying that plane that it's sometimes hard to look down where you're, you know, what the land is underneath you. And the funders see that bigger picture, and therefore we really, I think, believe that how important this is going to be, in the sense that, you know, a stronger audience coming to these organizations is going to build the organizations, but it's going to build the community. It's going to have more people coming to Syracuse from outside of the city, so there's more tourism. You know, there's more restaurants then. There's a whole bunch of things. I know it's like a duh moment, but it is really true. The arts can transform a community as an economic engine, as a point of pride. And once, of course, these organizations start to get stronger, it's not a matter of that means they don't continue to have needs. They will continue to have needs, but hopefully there will be more available to them because the legislature might realize how important they are. There will be more tax dollars coming in, so there might be more dollars. There's more advocacy information that can go out to people. So we feel that there's just a very long-term as well as these immediate short-term effects. So that's it, and
Ellen.
Hi. Thank you very much for doing this project. It is really important in the community. Steve, you mentioned the article about West Jenny and Syosset School District, and it didn't seem to me that they talked about the lack of arts to work with the school districts. They were talking about the lack of money. And I'm really wondering, you haven't talked about how funding is going on in New York State, how NISCA is losing money, how the education departments are losing money, and how they don't have the money to bring kids in or to take programs out, and how will we address that?
When I made the, when I wrote the letter about cultural assets available to schools, I was going outside of the subject of the article up to a point, but that was to reassure that there are institutions like the Everson and like the Opera that do have programs. Funding is the issue. Funding for arts and culture in New York State has taken another hit with cuts to NISCA. The governor talked about a 2% across the board cut to all state agencies. And that included cuts to the, what is it called, local aid distributions, whatever, the money that comes back into our communities. And NISCA accepted its 2% cut as what we all have to do to fix things. But then the cut to distribution to localities was 10%. So once again, the arts are being targeted in what I think is a very short-sighted way. It's been suggested that maybe that was just a mistake in the addition or subtraction, as the case may be. I suspect that that's a very generous thing. And we, as an arts community, again, this, the idea of coming together, advocacy, identity, the stronger we are, the stronger you recognize us as being, the stronger the community sees us, and the more noise that's made in support of us, I don't think we'll see those cuts in the same way. And there is a rally that's taking place. And I'm delighted to say that Syracuse is a little bit at the core here upstate in representing the needs of arts and culture in Albany. It's a bad time with state funding now. We're all anticipating significant cuts, and of course NISCA's there. But now, how can we serve the schools? I think it's the same old story with administrators have to be convinced of the value of visits to our institutions. We do not have a dedicated bus fund, though we ask for funding for that on a regular basis, and it is not something that has materialized. All of our tours, all of our activities at the museum for school kids are free. So at least that hurdle, that obstacle has been taken away so that whether you're in a wealthier or a less well-resourced school district, you still have access to the Everson. Unfortunately, we have a hard time getting you there. But the museum was the first art museum in the United States to offer school tours, the Everson, and that goes back to 1901. And so we're absolutely just as committed to it now, 110 years later.
I'd like to speak for the as an advocate for the geezers. Very often, my wife, for example, died 20 years ago. She was an active member of Everson. I was an active member of Everson because of her at first. Since her death, I have never received a solicitation to be a member of Everson through my computer, through Facebook, through electronic media that you don't have to worry about. I think I should.
I'll give you.
I was going to say, I noticed that your name tag is below the table level, so if you move that up a little higher.
We've got it covered, but that does bring, while we're on the subject of funding, a question about, I don't know if it's more philanthropy, but you talked about the lack of significant audience overlap. Do you know how are we, Central New Yorkers or Onondaga County residents, as funders of the art, as individuals, compared to other places? You know, how well do we open up our pockets, not just to buy tickets, but, you know, to respond to your appeals? How are we? Are we tight?
I can't speak to that directly. I don't know if you guys know more data, but I do know that the part of the study and what it will do is, well, let me back up. There's something called the Cultural Data Project that has just started in New York. I don't know if any of you are familiar with it, but basically it's funded by the Pew Charitable Trust, and it promotes the idea that all arts cultural organizations, also it's a fairly big tent in this, I think it's nonprofits though, right, would have the ability to put their data in on their sales, their contributions, their expenses, and they put it in sort of in a very common app, if you will, a common format, and they can update it. So they get in their last 2 years, and it has to be audited financial statements. And then every year they renew it, and then if they have to give the Gifford Foundation, the Community Foundation, a grant application, and we ask for their financials, all they have to do is push a button, and the Cultural Data Project sends us their stuff. So it's a hugely efficient. It's a little bit daunting in the beginning because you have to get those 2 years of stuff in. But once that's in, it's really helpful. Our idea is that we would be able to use that as not only a starting point, our base, for determining an evaluation of this program, but also as comparison. And so Surreal wants to look at Buffalo, Rochester, certainly local, and Surreal might know the answer to this nationally, comparisons. And the Cultural Data Project is national, by the way. It's being rolled out in state after state after state. So, yes, we could compare to populations of our size. The only wrinkle in all this is because it's audited materials, we actually aren't looking at 2010 quite yet, because for some organizations, those audits have not even been completed yet. So it's a little bit, the data point is lagging. So it won't be fruitful for her to actually get the good comparison data probably till about 6 to 9 months from now. Then we can get our base point and she can begin to compare, and then we will track it year after year after year after year to see how ideas itself, which could be perhaps quantitatively but also more anecdotally, is benefiting it, but also just in general how our community tracks with other people.
Heidi, was there any information or discussion about perhaps the need for some of these multiple organizations, if not to cooperate more, to perhaps merge and create a stronger cultural administration organization in this community?
I don't think there was there's certainly no specific recommendations on her part to say you and you should come together. But I think that from the specifics of this report, there is a lot of product. I'm not going to lie to you. But I don't think that there's necessarily a recommendation that things must merge. Now, they must plan better together. And if that means people become in more strategic partnerships, I think that would be a good thing. And I think I can say that for just not the arts, but for all the social service and everybody organizations. There's a lot more that everyone can be doing. We tended to be a siloed community, and I think the arts were siloed. And I think this is getting to break that down a little bit.
Last week, David Holder was here, and he was talking about, obviously, visitors to our community. And one of the, I don't know if I want to call it a criticism, but one of the things that he learned is that there was a lack of adequate signage. And I know that I sent recently some students down to the Historical Association. They had no idea where it was. Now, it wasn't a problem. They can Google it. But the reality is they don't know where many of the arts institutions are located in the city, and they don't really have a reason to go there. I think there's a lot of things, and I could talk to you about this after we're finished here. There's a lot of things that can be done to encourage them to go. But one of the other drawbacks, which you probably have no control over, is the fact that now Centro is cutting back on buses. So that could also be a barrier for the students getting off campus.
Right, and when you speak about, I'm sorry, just signage, there were really two issues, I think, directional signage and then signage, banners, whatever, for the instance.
That's where the policy issue comes in. We can't control some of it, but Steve.
I'd like to comment on signage. And center up to a point, just the easy answer, that at least for some of the students, the connective corridor bus is a solution. That's some. That's not everybody that serves SU, but it can be linked into. But signage is an issue that I think is near and dear to all of us who are downtown. There's not a single sign on I-90 that gives a hint that there's anything going on in Syracuse. If you're driving east or west on I-90 and you hit Utica, you know that there's the Munson Williams Proctor Institute, you know that there's the Stanley Theater, you know there's a whole list of things going on. Not a single sign on the thruway. There's not a single sign on I-81 that cuts right through our city in the most deplorable way, some would say, that says if you get off at this exit, you've been driving since Pennsylvania, get off, and you can actually take a break. That will equip you better to keep driving until you get to Montreal. And that requires working with the state, it requires regulations, and it requires significant payout. That's on our highways. That's not even talking about the four generations of signage that we have in the city, with signs adjacent to the Everson Museum, P.S., that doesn't have a sign out on the street saying what it is. The Everson, it was only through sort of asking favor, could we please get a sign at the bottom of the exit ramp? So I think that this whole idea, again, connective corridor up to a point is addressing signage, wayfinding downtown. But again, I think stronger advocacy on our part as a community is what's going to lead to city, county, and state officials deciding that we actually do need some information on the roads that indicate who is where and how to get there.
And the Convention and Visitors Bureau is actually one of the organizations, a part of IDEAS. They've been at the table right along.
So, and David is a great partner in this one. He's also helping lead the charge with some of us.
There are a lot of people within walking distance of many of these institutions, and I wonder how much outreach you have done in the schools. I've spent some time in the schools, and there's no information about cultural organizations in the schools, so people on their own could walk to them.
You know, I think that's among, again, the things that coming together can do, because, you know, I worked at Syracuse Stage, and we have present tense, it's been 7 years, and I still say I work at Syracuse Stage, but Syracuse Stage has a very sophisticated outreach to schools. I'm sure they would always want more students, but they have a very sophisticated. I'm sure they have a much more complex and ability to reach more schools than possibly even the Erie Canal, which has lower resources and smaller staff. One of the things that this study can do, we hope, particularly with the CRC stepping up and this collective outreach, collective marketing, is to some degree level the playing field while at the same time building the pie and broadening the base. So organizations can come together, and the CRC then goes to the schools and says, by the way, these are the schools within your, you know, walkable area. Becoming a more walkable city, by the way, was another thing that the survey said. So,
just to comment on schools, I suspect every organization above a certain, every organization that has any education staff whatsoever, and I know to be the fact with OHA, Symphony, Opera, Everson, Stage, I suspect the same at the Erie Canal Museum, we'll hear in a moment, that we have very specific programs in our institutions that connect to New York State learning standards. So if anybody in the schools doesn't know about what's going on with arts and culture, they're not paying attention, because that is something that is promoted tirelessly. And the big issue with use by the schools of us is obstacles placed by financial constraints and unenlightened administrators. And when we do have participation, in fact, a group coming from a suburban school district to the Everson, they also will design it so once they're in the city, they can also take advantage of history, they can take advantage of contemporary art, they can take advantage of Erie Canal, and you have multiple stops by single school districts. So I think to keep on pushing the schools, which is what we've been doing at the Everson for the last 30 years, and as we've already heard from Natalie, that's the way we develop our next generation, and there's no way that any of us in the city are turning our back on serving the schools.
The Erie Canal is actually part of the fourth grade New York State curriculum. So at the Erie Canal Museum, we work to bring as many fourth graders as possible to the museum. And up until, I think, last year, we actually did have bus funding. And even though we had bus funding, we at times would have trouble getting schools to come. You can come and see us for free. We are part of your curriculum. Students can actually come and see buildings that were part of the Erie Canal. And I think Steve mentioned administrators. I think that teachers and administrators, we're working on educating them at the importance of the cultural institutions so that they want to bring their students as well.
And the thing is, you don't just look to an art museum to teach art.
Right.
That's a misconception. You look at the art museum to teach analytical thought.
Mm-hmm.
We can work on shape and color in the most basic way that serves mathematics. You look at the visual thinking strategies methodology in the art museum that teaches self-expression and literacy. These are activities that reach far beyond just the simple you get paper and you cut things out and paste them together when you're in the art museum. And you know, this, the Everson now is serving approximately, on average, 9,000 school kids a year. So this is a success story, but we need the resources so the schools can participate and so that we can not just keep things level where they are, but as we see with the funding cuts in the schools, we need to be able to deliver more.
My dad has a motto that art makes you smart, and I like that.
And it rhymes.
Yes, so it's catchy.
As a sculptor, I've been here 50 years, I find this a very positive, exciting, and wonderful development. It's just a beautiful thing that's happening, so it's great. My question, though, is content. You talked about, to tie in just what you just said, to tie in the new media, the whole thing, to get the new audience, to get the young people, has the issue of content been worked out? Like the symphony, they're saying, is there an audience for the classic performance, what is needed? Have you addressed content to interest the new generation that has everything at their fingertips? How have the individual organizations altered their approach to make the excitement that the young people are now jaded from what we used to do of cut and paste? Has that been addressed?
Do you want to start?
I will start. I think that that's something that the institutions working in the Ideas Collaborative are working towards. Phase two of the collaborative has just begun, where we're going to all meet with Sorrell and have individual meetings where she's going to tell us, help us find our audience. And I think once that happens, these institutions are going to work towards perhaps changing content some. But I think rather than changing content, I think what's really important is reaching the youth to let them know that the content that we already have is important. Yes, you can Google Erie Canal and see all sorts of things, but you can come down to the museum and actually see physical objects. And that, hopefully, the youth will continue to find really cool. Like, it's cool to see actual things. And like you said, they're getting kind of jaded. They're jaded by digital images. Going to the Everson and seeing a painting by an artist you learned about in class, that's always been something I've always enjoyed. And I think that more importantly than changing content is helping the youth learn that the content we already have is exciting.
There's also a reason why, and I actually should have done this from the beginning, IDEA stands for Initiative to Develop and Engage Audiences in Syracuse. Obviously it's beyond Syracuse, but IDEAS is a nice thing. So Sorrell stresses, I happen to actually hate the term audience development, just having been in audience development. I really have never enjoyed the term. And part of it is because it seems very one way. And I think that that engagement portion, and Sorrell stresses, this is not just simply marketing. This is examining your programming and coming up with things. And she thinks there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in our community where there is programming that the audience, that there's disconnect between that program is there that they want, but somehow they're not hearing about it. Maybe some organizations need to think about a different way of approaching and a different way of marketing. That could just be a reality. It helps significantly, I think, that there's kind of an outsider coming in and telling us these things. I think it makes it more accessible to some degree to hear, and she obviously listened to the community. There have been a lot of studies and a lot of times the arts organizations have come together and talked. But this is really a time the community started saying what they needed. And I think that comes into this whole idea of let's communicate, let's find out what's going on. We did these community conversations in all four quadrants of the county and all four quadrants of the city. And we had, you know, we had bilingual, you know, community conversations. So we definitely had to address the broader community, and maybe programming has to change because it might be limited to some degree, or at least marketed to some degree, to a fairly narrow population.
Okay. Thank you very much for telling us about the Ideas Collaborative, and we'll be collaborating.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.